It's the most important day on the WCHL broadcast calendar, the 2013 Chapel Hill Carborough Orange County Forum on 97.9 FM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station, and streaming live on chapelgrove.com. 10 hours live from the WCHL studios, featuring more than 60 members of our local community, discussing and debating thought-provoking local topics. The forum is brought to you by Molly Maid, the Happy Tooth, the UPS stores, Fordham Boulevard and Metamont, Autologic, Carolina Inn, Harrington Bank, Durham Tech, and University Mall. Now, hour four, and the topic is growth.
Welcome to hour four of the 2013 WCHL Community Forum. This forum offers 10 topics in 10 hours, featuring commentary and discussion among town and university officials and other representatives from our community, all focused on the important issues affecting our county. In this hour, we'll discuss growth and what our community has done and needs to do to be sustainable for the years to come. And our panel joining us today include Brian Litchfield, who is the interim director of the Chapel Hill Carborough Transit System, and Renee Price, who is a member of the Orange County Board of Commissioners, Damon Siles, who is the newly elected representative on the Carborough Board of Aldermen, Dwight Bassett, who is the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development Officer, George Cienciello, who recently finished a long process being co-chair of Chapel Hill 2020, and Dolores Bailey, the Executive Director of Empowerment Inc. Welcome everybody to today's panel. Well, growth. How do you deal with growth in our short time? I would like to start by throwing some numbers out to you. First, our population in 1990 was 94,000. In 2000, it was 115,500. In 2012, it's almost 138,000. We obviously have grown. What do you think we did right or didn't do right to get us into the right position to deal with the growth? And let me start with Dwight Bassett, because you do this all day long.
I think there are a lot of things that are tremendously great about all the municipalities and Orange County that make people want to be a part of our community. The fact that we're centered around a major educational institute, we have great educational systems, our physical location, the fact that you can live in an urban or semi-rural environment and still live in this county. There's just a tremendous amount from a quality of life perspective that help set the stage for people to want to be here. And I think that that growth will continue just based upon the foundation that we've built over the last hundreds of years to become who we are today.
Thanks, Dwight. George Cienciello, what is your take on that? Because you've spent a lot of hours studying this.
Well, I think what we did wrong was we did not keep our eye on the ball in terms of the balance between commercial growth and residential growth. And we've had excellent residential growth. I think we've tried to plan our residential growth. But in doing so, we lost the fact that without that commercial tax base, that we were putting a lot more pressure, especially as we began to grow within our limits. We put much more pressure on the residential taxpayers, and that's something I think we need to try to find a solution to rectify.
Renee Price, as a elected representative to the Orange County Board of County Commissioners, you struggle with this issue all the time. What's your take?
Well, I think one of the things we have to deal with is how to manage the growth. I'm very pleased that we have grown, and the reason being because of so many assets in Orange County. But indeed, how do we balance between growth in population and being able to sustain all the new people that are coming in? And let me just say, I was one of those people that came in 1990, so I participated in this growth. But we do have so many assets in this community, from the arts to new technology, education. So it is a place where people want to come, and the issue is, how are we going to deal with that?
great. Brian Siles, as a newly elected member of the Carrboro Board of Aldermen, and I should add, a member and chair of the Carrboro Planning Board, you've struggled with this quite a bit too. What's your take?
I think one thing that we have done right over the past, 20 years or so, and we've saw this come up in the discussion about the transit tax referendum, was we actually have done some pretty deliberate planning for long-term vision for transit, regional transit. And I think Brian will be able to talk a little bit more about that if he chooses, but we've, Chapel Hill especially has done some pretty deliberate things over the past 20 years to create a possibility for future transit corridors and things like that. One thing I think, or we maybe have missed an opportunity, is in better defining the style of residential growth that's happening in our community. We have, I think, despite our best intentions, experienced a little bit of sprawl, and that you talked about sustainability in your intro. I don't think that that type of residential development is something that is ultimately going to be sustainable.
Dolores Bailey of Empowerment, your organization works with people affected by growth. What is your take?
I think Chapel Hill, Orange County does a wonderful job of inviting people into the county and into their neighborhoods. But I think the unintended consequences of what's happening is, as we grow, what we didn't think about is what happens to the people who have been here for forever. What happens to people who have lived here since 1930 and even 1990? The problem is, are they being considered? Their houses. Everybody wants to live where they work. That's not happening. And I'll talk a little bit later about it, but I'm sure there's some pros and some cons, and we definitely see both sides of it.
Thank you. Brian Litchfield, the interim director of Chapel Hill Transit, your organization clearly responds to growth. So what is your take?
Well, Chapel Hill Transit is a partnership between the University of North Carolina, Town of Chapel Hill, and the Town of Carrboro, plays a role in supporting the growth and development of the area. And I think it's something that all of those partners have, as far as public transit is concerned, have supported. And as Damon alluded to, have done a very nice job of planning and getting us to the point to where we are today. I think the next step for us is coming out of specifically for Chapel Hill, coming out of the 2020 process, and also conversations that come out of the development of the bus and rail plan for Orange County, is how do we take those next steps and what are those next steps so that we can continue to develop within the vision that is identified by 2020 and other guiding documents throughout the community.
Well, thank you very much, all of you. By the way, who lived in this area prior to 1990? George Cienciello lived here.
Since before 1989,
I and Dolores, in. You are a.
I've been here since 1975.
Since 75, mm-hmm. The rest of us came during that period, so we're part of the growth. One of the things that strikes me is that when we talk about growth, in a major way, we're talking about coping with change, and change, of course, can be very, very difficult to deal with, but particularly on elected bodies, but even citizen groups have a hard time sometimes getting their hands around change. What change do you think has put the most pressure on us growth-wise?
Fred, I'd like to.
I know what Dolores is going to say. Go ahead and say it, Dolores.
And I'm going to say it. It has absolutely affected affordable housing in Chapel Hill, and in the negative. Even as we grapple today, not just with Northside and Pine Knolls, as we look at this over and over again, we are pushing out those people who can live in Chapel Hill. As we grow and it looks great and we're bringing in lots of different types of people, there's a certain level of folk that are not being addressed. They're paying their property taxes, which are increasing every year, every 2 or 3 years. They're sending their children to the Chapel Hill Carrboro school system, and they're getting good educations. But not many of them can stay much longer. The older residents are being pushed out. They can't afford their taxes. So part of what's going on in Chapel Hill is, as we grow and look good, there's an underlying consequence of what's happening to the folk who are living here and who have lived here for many, many years.
Dwight Bassett, what do you think?
It's really interesting. If, you know, I come to Chapel Hill having been in this field a long time and not remembering that liberal arts education always requires economic development 101. So I spent a lot of time teaching the class. And so I have to go back to a really basic premise in economics period. And that is when you affect supply and demand, you affect value. One of the things that we've yet to acknowledge, in my opinion, and again, it's my opinion, that we have attempted to affect the supply to some level, which has affected value dramatically. The demand never changed. It grew. And so, therefore, our home values are unusually high for the region, and they're an extra 8 to 10% high even for us. And then you add a high tax on top of that, that we need to go back and understand how we arrived at that destination that we decided we shouldn't let the market dictate what seemed to be appropriate for this area. We should go back to the basic premise that the market will guide and direct itself. Developers don't build product that don't have a demand, and that we need to have some level of use by right where we are allowed to let the market grow. Because part of what's happened, if you look at the market growth of the last 30 years and starting work for council on affordable housing and looking at the preliminary data, we looked at household incomes for 30 years, 90, 2000, 2010. One of the most interesting statistics that came out of looking at that data, we had a 57% growth in household income over $100,000. Well, that tells us where the housing market's being driven to, and it's because it's a constrained market allowing just a 1.5% growth per year. And, you know, if the market could respond to the demand that actually is out there, I think that we could level out the housing market a little better and do a better job of meeting workforce and affordable.
Thank you. Damon Siles, what were you going to contribute? Yeah,
if you look at the way that the housing stock has grown in Carrboro over the last 15 years or so, what you have seen is a growth in the stock at the very high end of the scale. So, you know, I don't remember the exact number, but I know I've been told recently that the median home price for newly built houses in Carrboro is something in the range of $500,000 or more. I mean, it's, you know, through the roof. So the market is certainly meeting one end of the scale in terms of demand for certain kinds of housing stock. It is not meeting the part of the scale for housing stock that I think all of us around this table are concerned about and that Dolores is talking about. So I think we are meeting demand, but the demand is at a very high end of the scale.
But we've still attempted to limit that. I mean, I think we as a county in general have been very cautious with our growth. And I respect the fact that we want to preserve the sense of place, but growth does not necessarily mean you lose that sense of place. And I would contend that if you look at the growth that's happened all around us in Durham and Raleigh and their percentages of growth, our 1.5% has been somewhat limiting when it comes to the real demands.
Renee Price.
Oh, I wanted to concur with what Dolores Bailey was saying, and it's true that one of the aspects of growth is what about the people that have been here for years, the neighborhoods? We're seeing growth, but who's coming in? And what are we doing with the people that have already been here? We liked what we saw when we came, but that meant displacing a lot of people. And getting outside of Chapel Hill, Carrboro, even Hillsborough, when you look at some of the rural areas, a lot of growth has come with residential subdivisions coming in, which means we're losing a lot of farmland. Now, indeed, we are seeing a resurgence in the smaller organic farms, and they're doing well. But as we continue to grow and come in with new ideas, we're changing the landscape of Orange County and what it looks like and who's here and who's not here. The demographics are changing drastically over the past 30 years. They have, and they continue to change.
George Cianciello, how did you come out of 2020 process thinking about this?
Well, 2020, of course, I think just about everyone in 2020 agreed that we need more affordable housing. I think they were saying we need affordability in general. I mean, not just housing, but the cost of living in this community is very high to start with. But in terms of what Damon and Dolores and Renee were saying, the builders are building for the high-end market because their cost of getting into the market is so high. The cost, because we've constrained where builders can build, the cost of acquiring land, the cost, the regulations that builders have to go through, the timing, when it takes 2 to 4 years to get a project approved, when you have the uncertainty of what your zoning is going to be, all of those have added to builder saying it isn't worth my risk going in and building more affordable housing if I can build for a high-end market where I'm assured of getting my money back. So I think we really have to strategize to come up with creative, innovative ways to sort of make builders want to build for that lower-end market, to say, hey, I can sell those homes because I can get in at the right time. I know what the regulations are going to be. I know exactly what hoops I have to jump through. So I think this is something that people were asking for in 2020 and is ongoing now. I mean, part of the 2020 didn't end in June, but it's an ongoing process. And I think that process is to make regulations to be more attractive to developers. So developers look at this community as one they want to come to and not just build for the high end. Mm-hmm. But it's going to take work. I mean, we're not there yet.
Brian Litchfield, what about your take on this?
Well, I think one of the things that we look at from a transit perspective, and as we hear this, we have to work to find ways to integrate our transit planning with the affordable housing and workforce development, our workforce housing strategies as well, too, because one of the biggest, well, the single biggest expense for most households outside of their mortgage or their rent payment is their automobile. So if there's ways that we can provide access to jobs, to retail, to many other things that this, the many great things that this community has via ways other than an automobile, perhaps there's ways that we can still attract folks to the community or provide housing that works for them and may not be, you know, may be much more affordable as a result of having that access that they may not have in other communities.
Okay. Damon Stiles, you wanted to add something briefly before we go to break?
Yeah, I think Brian's comments really connect to something I mentioned at the beginning about the style of home building that we're, or the style of home residential planning that we're pursuing in the community. You know, when we allow a suburban style of development, it's not a style of development that supports transit very well. And so what we end up with is suburban residential developments where we're trying to also include affordable housing, for example, but then the people who would be wanting to look into affordable housing can't afford the transportation they would need because there's no access to transit. So this is actually happening in a development in Carborough right now where Community Home Trust has a couple of affordable units that they can't get rid of because there's no bus service. No.
Well, let me break in right now, and we'll come back and resume. But you're listening to Hour 4 of the 2013 WCHL Chapel Hill Carborough Community Forum. In this hour, we're discussing growth and what our community has done and needs to do to be sustainable for the years to come. We're going to take our commercial break, and this is Fred Black. Don't go away.
It's not too soon to make plans for enrolling at the Orange County campus at Durham Tech, your hometown college in Hillsboro. Hi, this is Penny Gluck, Executive Dean of Durham Tech's Orange County campus, here to tell you that registration for fall classes starts in July. So act now by getting your or your child's transfer or high school transcript together. Then set up a time to visit our Orange County campus in Hillsboro to sign up for our high-demand classes before they fill up. Find out more at durhamtech.edu and click on the Orange County campus.
When you think of Harrington Bank, do you think green? No, not that kind of green, sustainability green. At Harrington Bank, we're the first bank in the nation to earn Green Plus certification. And the Chapel Hill Carborough Chamber of Commerce has just selected us Sustainable Business of the Year. For Harrington Bank, going green is a smart business decision that strengthens our local economy, environment, and community. Stop by one of our three convenient locations in Chapel Hill. Harrington Bank, you deserve banking like this.
Hi, this is Michelle from the Carolina Inn. For 88 years, we've been serving our community with the finest hospitality and space for important community gatherings. Through the years, our commitment to serving Chapel Hill has never wavered, which is why we are proud to support the 2013 WCHL Community Forum. When John Sprunt Hill built the Carolina Inn in the 1920s, he and his contemporaries vigorously discussed the issues of the day, and I'm sure he would be proud to know that tradition continues today. The Carolina Inn, part of your community since 1924.
You wouldn't start a home repair project without the right tools, and if you're starting your own business, the right tools are essential to success. At the UPS store, we have a small business startup toolkit that includes a private mailbox, packing services, flyers, brochures, business cards, and more. What's in your small business toolkit? Ask about our small business startup toolkit today at the UPS stores. We love small business, and we love logistics.
The UPS store is at Meadowmont, Chapel Hill North, and on Fordham Boulevard, next to the Chapel Hill University Inn.
Local people, local issues. It's WCHL's Chapel Hill Carborough Orange County Forum. 10 solid hours on 97.9 FM WCHL and streaming live on chapelboro.com. Now, back to the forum.
Welcome back to Hour 4, one of the 2013 WCHL Chapel Hill Carborough Community Forum. We are here with several important dignitaries from our community, and we're discussing growth in our community. When we left off, we sort of had given the idea that a lot of this growth had some unintended consequences, as Dolores put it. But what I would like you to consider now as we move forward is, how do we deal with the expectation capabilities gap? And by that I mean, people move here, as we've seen by the numbers, and Renee admitted to being one of those. They move here with expectations. How do we close that gap between their expectations and our capabilities? And Dwight, I want to start with you. Dwight Bassett, I want to start because I know that you have to struggle with that too.
So define capabilities.
Money. Can we provide everything that people expect?
I think we can do a better job. I don't think, you know, we've made some conscious decisions over the last 30, 40, 50 years to be who we are. And some of that we can't reverse even in our lifetime, I don't think. So I think we have to figure out what are the best paths that we can take that begin to chart in a different direction, you know, whether that's, you know, capturing additional retail, a better capture of the office market, as well as looking at some options for the housing product types that have been built and where the market demand really is and how we can encourage those to be built. We're going through an asset evaluation with the town and looking at some of the available land that the town has. You know, we take a look at that and figure out if there's some opportunity for us to take some of that property that we already own and encourage development that meets the overall vision and goals that came out of 2020 and with the elected officials, and use that as a tool to help begin to chart a slightly different path than we've taken in the past.
Damon Siles, let me ask you, do you see the ability to meet some of those expectations that don't necessarily involve dollars?
Well, I'm sort of on this, I'm still hanging on to the end of Dwight's comment there, and I'm going to try to tie that in with what you just asked
me. Okay, go right ahead.
But the short answer might be no. But I think Dwight's idea is a good one, that, you know, that the towns do have some limited assets in terms of property, and it gives us a little bit more say of how that property is developed. And I think that's one example where the towns and the county can shape development in a way that meets expectations without the kind of investment or unloading of cash from the taxpayers that we would normally have to undertake. So, mm-hmm.
Dolores Bailey.
I also want to comment on what Dwight was saying. My fear is that as we reshape Chapel Hill and its vision, the first thing I wanted to ask was, what are those things that we did 30 years ago that we can change? Because moving forward, we are not addressing workforce housing. Well, not even housing, just the needs of workforce population. For instance, as we build new buildings, as 140 comes online and the University Square changes, are those going to be stores that the workforce population in Chapel Hill Carborough can shop at? Is it someplace? Is it like a Roses? Is it going to be something? Is it going to be a restaurant that I can visit and want to be at? We are changing and growing into a very high-end community. But what about how normal people grow? And are we going to force them out? And if you look at the numbers, that's what's happening. People are choosing, rather than live in this beautiful place, this well-educated place, can't afford the taxes, I can't. And we're not just talking about property owners. What about rentals as well? And spending your dollars and getting the best value that you can for your dollars. It's not happening in Chapel Hill. This is my point, ultimately, is I believe we need to stop it from going that direction, because we don't want to lose the diversity that we've got right now. And the only way to keep that is, in this day and time, to start thinking about 20 years down the road, what's going to keep us balanced.
George Sanciello.
Well, and I think if we're going to bridge the gap between expectations and capabilities, one of the things we need to do, and I think this is something that was started with Chapel Hill 2020, was do a better job of educating our citizens. I think what we learned and often learned in Chapel Hill 2020, and I've learned in many other situations, is many citizens don't know where the resources that run their town or their county come from. They don't understand how taxes are raised. They don't understand how taxes are distributed. They don't understand what change or lack of change. I think Mark Zimmerman wrote an excellent article last fall to say, even if we didn't grow at all, we would change, because the cost of running this community is continually going up for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. But we know, for instance, that personnel costs factor into a lot of the cost of running our community. And things like health insurance go up at double-digit rates oftentimes. So if people look and say, well, inflation's low, why are my taxes going up? And so I think we need to do a better job of educating the citizens so they understand that what they've come to expect and love comes at a cost, and what that cost is. And if we can do that, I think we'll help to bridge the gap. Yeah.
Renee Price, I want to put you on the spot, because one of those expectations is schools. And you, as a county commissioner, vote to fund the schools. And obviously, something has to be done to manage that growth.
Well, we will continue to fund the schools, because I think everyone on the Board of County Commissioners is committed, dedicated to good education.
But can that funding meet the expectations?
Well, I think what we really need to do, what has been mentioned earlier, but really is economic development, and that's what we need, and that's going to help to close the income gap. That's going to help with the diversity. We need diverse economic development, as well as diversity in our population and in our housing. Right now, we've got people that are high wage earners and those that are low wage earners. Others are being forced out of this community, and I think that we need to. It's got to be holistic. Has to be comprehensive. We can't look at just one thing.
Is there a rural city cut to that? Do you see the same kinds of things happening to the residents of the rural part of the county being forced out of their land?
Yes, as developers come in and want, I mean, they can offer, if they're having difficulties with farming, or if they're, and of course, one of the biggest issues is that in the past several decades is we've noticed that the farmers are getting older. And the younger one, their children are not interested in farming. They think that life in the big city is going to be much better. So we have some people that are going back to the farm, but a lot of people are saying, well, if I sell my land, there's my retirement, and I can go. So the developer comes in and gives them a sweet deal, then they have to leave. So that's what I meant by, a lot of things are changing.
And then you have a new development that Brian Litchfield is going to be asked to service with the transit system, right?
And it means another school may have to be built as more people come in.
And where do you put it?
Exactly.
Okay. So Brian, that affects you definitely, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it's always a challenge for, and I can speak specifically about transit, to find the resources that we need to provide the services that are expected by the community. We have about an $18.5 million budget. And to give you a sense of that, the town of Chapel Hill puts about $4 million into that budget on the local side. What that means is that, doing some quick math, that's what, $70 per capita, $200 per household. And what that gets, or what that provides the community, is transit service that's providing over 7 million rides. So we get a great deal of service at a fairly low cost. But the question that we have is, can we sustain that? And how do we continue to, or can we expand that to meet the needs that we're talking about?
Could you share the rest of the division of the pie?
Sure. $18 million budget, or $18.5 million budget, about $4 million from Chapel Hill, a little over $1 million, one from the town of Carrboro, about a little over $7 million from the University of North Carolina, and then the difference is state and federal resources that are grants or other things, that, other sources of revenue that we bring
from
in.
From tax dollars that we citizens have also paid.
That we have, yes.
Mm-hmm. So you pay twice in some ways.
Sometimes you pay twice, but again, if you, and again, just not having all the numbers off the top of my head, if you look at our cost per ride, it's about $2.65 per ride, which the national average for a transit system is about $4.10. So again, we're providing, with the resources that we have, we're providing a very efficient and cost-effective service. The big question we have is, can we continue to provide that service at that cost? And can we look at, again, providing services that meet the demands that the community is talking about? And one of the things that we're working with our partners on, which are, again, the Town of Chapel Hill, Town of Carrboro, and the University of North Carolina, is a long-range financial sustainability plan, which will be getting underway in the next couple of months, to talk about exactly those sort of things. Is, are there ways to fund this service that we haven't thought about? And if not, how do we keep paying for this? And how do we keep this thing going?
And so you have definitely seen growth in ridership.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Over 2001, before the system went fair, we were doing a little over 2 million rides. We're doing a little over 7 million rides now. So we're, I believe, what, the 16th largest city in North Carolina. We have the second largest transit system. So we're second only to Charlotte. I have a ways to go to catch up with them. But we provide a significant number of rides, more than Durham through their data, or Raleigh through their CAT system. However, both of them are catching up with us, though, too.
Well, thank you for that information. Damon Sowles.
Brian mentioned sustaining the system through fiscal planning, and I know that the partners are undertaking that project now with a long-range fiscal plan. But I think we also have a responsibility to help sustain the Chapel Hill Transit System by doing good planning, by doing good land use planning. You gain efficiencies in a transit system by placing housing in a way that it's easy to serve with transit. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have, in some parts of our community, gone down a path where that's just not going to be possible anywhere in the next couple of decades, frankly. There are parts of our community that will not receive transit service simply because they were developed in such a way that transit service is not efficient. So I think part of the responsibility is on those of us in the community who are responsible for planning policy, to make sure we plan in a way that sustains the transit system so that it's useful to the riders and the people who need it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, George Sincil.
Yeah, to follow up on what Brian and Damon said, I think here this is another example of where educating the public is extremely important. If you took those, I know people who say, I don't ride the bus. Why should I be paying for all those people riding the bus? And if you took those 7 million riders and put them in cars, what would our streets look like? What would our air quality look like? And these are the things I think that people sometimes don't think about. Right. They don't think about that. They just think somebody's getting a free ride on my dime. Well, it's not that case. You're getting cleaner air. You're getting less congested streets. And these are the things that I think, when we try to fit expectations with resources, we need to do a better job of making sure people understand that their dollars are going to, are providing a great service.
Yes, and it gets to the whole issue of land use planning, too, because somebody has to answer the question, if they all drove their car, where would they put it when they got where they wanted to go? How many more parking lots can we build? Or should we build? Brian Litchfield.
I think George makes a good point. Again, we do about, when school's in session, we do about 35,000 rides a day. So imagine all those folks driving in a car. That's tough to wrap your head around. But the other thing to remember is when we do our planning and as we talk with our partners about it, we feel that public transit is a piece of the transportation solution. So public transit isn't the only solution and isn't the only way to do this. So again, when we're looking at these solutions, we need to include transit in that, and it's a big part of what we do in this area, but it's also transit by itself is not going to solve these problems or the challenges that we're talking about. It's one of the tools that we have going along with our street network, with our bike and pedestrian network. All those things working together need to be looked at to help support the developments and others that we're talking about as well.
Dwight Bassett, when we approve a development proposal, there's been a lot of work that went into that proposal that addresses some of these very issues we are talking about. Could you briefly give us an idea of what has to be done before a proposal gets approved in terms of evaluating impacts?
It's kind of interesting because we had talked years ago about doing a better job of looking at how we balance that. And so we've spent very little time, but council has since expressed in the last few months interest coming out of 2020 in evaluating it. And they're calling it an economic analysis, but we actually see it as a document that evaluates all the issues and how do we balance all those issues. In other words, if we get an economic gain, but we have to balance with a little bit of environmental and social, and how do we balance that all out so that everyone moves forward in a productive way. And so we've been talking about how we can do a better job of communicating that information. We've been talking to firms that can help us sort through that data and understand what that balance means. We also have been having internal staff look at it. Staff generally right now does a really simple high-level evaluation of projects. We don't dig down very good, and so it's not the kind of data that would be helpful in making that decision. But we're certainly looking at, in the coming months, of changing that paradigm and making sure that we're providing council with an understanding of what it means to balance better.
Before we go on our break, Renee Price, what happens at the county level when you all are presented with a proposal?
Well, there are many steps to it. I was on the planning board for countless years. we actually lost track. But there's the concept plan, there's site planning. I mean, there's a whole
array. But you examine the trade-offs, too.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. There's environmental, there's social, there's equity, environmental. So we look at all, you know, all aspects because, well, our community here in Orange County, we are a very conscious group of people. And even though the planning board may look at the proposal, by the time it gets to the Board of County Commissioners, we look at it, but also the community will look at it. There may, in some cases, there'll be a public hearing. And then we have to go back and reanalyze what we've done and look at it again. And if it's a huge project, then, you know, you've got environmental impact statements and whatnot to.
But I think it's safe to say that these things are not done in a vacuum, that we are evaluating the trade-offs and the cost of doing business one way or another.
Oh, yes.
Damon Siles, you were on the planning board of Carrboro. You felt the same pressures, I'm sure.
And I think, you know, it's not only a matter of balancing calculating trade-offs, but also thinking about how the process itself can be used to shape what you want the outcome to be. And I want to connect this to some of Dolores' concerns at the beginning of the panel, which is...
Well, we'll come back from the break and pick up on that point. You're listening to Hour 4 of the 2013 WCHL Chapel Hill Carrboro Community Forum. Our topic is growth in our community, and we're going to take one more commercial break. And this is Fred Black, and we'll be right back.
At the Happy Tooth, dentistry is more than a profession. It's a passion. Here's Dr. Larry Murray.
My dad was the town dentist in the town that we grew up. And I always enjoyed spending time in his office and watching how he interacted with patients. The Happy Tooth concept is one where we want the patients to feel welcome and part of the family. I try to extend myself to all of my patients and make myself available to them for whatever their needs are, be it orthodontics, general dentistry, or beyond.
For more information, visit happytoothcares.com.
Congratulations to locally owned and operated AutoLogic of Carrboro. They recently earned a Green Plus certification. Here's Marianne Jones with more.
What it means to us is that the business practices that Andrew Jones established many, many years ago qualify us for green certification. A business is judged on a variety of categories: people, planet, and performance. And we were judged on our recycling efforts, care of our employees, and our overall performance in the area of sustainability. We're always open to new ideas and new recycling efforts. We're committed to recycling waste oils, lubricants, batteries, antifreeze, scrap metal, and tires. We care about our current environment and that which we leave for our children, our customers' children, and the whole planet.
AutoLogic of Carrboro, Green Plus certified and doing good for our cars and our planet. Trust in logic for your imported automobile. Call 919-933-6609. That's 919-933-6609. AutoLogic. Visit AutoLogicOnline.com.
Bring the kids, welcome your neighbors, and leave the work week behind. Hi, this is Michelle at the Carolina Inn, inviting you to join us for the first Fridays on the Front Porch of the season on April 26th, starting at 5 p.m. Fridays on the Front Porch provides the perfect atmosphere for kicking back, relaxing, and getting a jump start on the weekend. Enjoy great food, live music, and fun times under the shady oaks and magnolia trees. There's no cover charge and no reservations to attend. For more information, visit CarolinaInn.com.
You're listening to the 2013 Chapel Hill Carrboro Orange County Forum on WCHL and streaming live on chapelboro.com. Now, back to the forum.
Welcome back to the 2013 WCHL Chapel Hill Carrboro Community Forum. And we're going to jump right back in our discussion of growth in our community. And I want to pick up with a point that Damon Siles was going to make right before the break.
I just wanted to try to connect some threads that have been put together here. George has talked about the cost of the development process and the cost of land contributing so much to the high value of building in the community. Dolores has talked about the need for more affordable and workforce housing. And I think when we talk about planning processes in the town and what's required of developers, one way to shape what developers want to build is to adapt our processes to encourage that, right? So if we want a certain kind of housing development, we add incentives to the process so that builders are able to build more cheaply or with not as much procedure to go through. Maybe it takes them less time to get developments built if they're offering a certain amount of affordable housing in the development, that kind of thing. But we have room to do that in all of our planning processes at this table.
Well, I think that's an excellent point. Well, we're down to our last segment, and what I would like to ask each of you to now do is put on your dream hat. And we know we're going to continue to grow. We've seen all sorts of projections from the Census Bureau. We've seen the university's projections. We clearly understand that growth will continue in this region, and a lot of it will occur right here in Orange County. So what I would like to ask you to do is share some of your dreams for the future and how we're going to deal with the growth we know is coming. And what you might add is equipping us to do this might require X, Y, and Z. Let's start with Dolores Bailey first, because she's a big dreamer.
I am, and from the perspective of empowerment and the people that we work with and the communities that we serve, if I could dream big about this, I want to think about 10 years down the road with the seniors that are graduating this year, of one of which I have, and are we setting up a community? Are we setting up an environment that when they spend their 4 years at UNC, at UNCG, at Appalachian, at Durham Tech, are we creating an environment here in Chapel Hill Carrboro that they want to come back and be a part of? And that is my dream, is that we educate them well, but before they leave, somewhere in between now and their 4 years, Chapel Hill does an invitation to them and explains that they're growing and that there is going to be a place for them to buy a home or rent a home. There is going to be a job available to them. I'm going to believe that that is going to happen, and that's going to happen through our planning and a lot from what's coming out in these seminars today.
George Cinciello, what's your dream?
Well, my dream is that first that we stop being so negative, that I think there's so much negativity in terms of, we hear people say, well, the counties around us, Durham County, Alamance County, Chatham County, have all, you know, sought out commercial development, built on our borders, and now we don't have the commercial development, we're paying the price. What's done is done. I think we need to set a vision. We need to say, what do we want to be? What do we need? We need more affordable housing. We need more workforce housing. We need more commercial development. Those are the things we need, and we want to retain the resources and services we have. So laying that on the table, say, okay, let's come up with a plan to accomplish that. Let's, as Damon said, let's figure out ways, incentives to get the commercial developers to come in and build without, you know, destroying the environment, without destroying neighborhoods. I find it hard to believe that a community that has as much intellectual horsepower as this can't figure out strategic ways to accomplish all the things we want to do. So that's my vision.
Great. Renee Price, you are nodding.
Indeed, yes, we are growing, we are changing, it's going to continue to happen. And one of the things that I would like to see and hope we will see is more collaboration with all entities, Hillsborough, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and the county, and also Mebane and Durham, and really work together on this. And I'm looking forward to seeing more diversity with population, with housing, bringing in more economic development so that people can actually stay here so we can sustain ourselves and taking advantage of the intellectual power that we do have. And we also have farms we can capitalize on ag tourism as well as the arts. And the arts are big in Orange County throughout. I mean, we have arts councils, we have all kinds of cultural events that are happening, and I'd like to see that continue. And but again, it really is going to mean working together. We can't just say, well, I'm here, I'm Chapel Hill, I'm Hillsborough, I'm, you know, Carrboro, and I'm Orange County. We really have to pull together. There are too many issues that are that cross those political boundaries, and we really have to come together as a community.
Damon Sells.
I'll talk a little bit about Carrboro, I guess.
Yes, please do.
I guess what, to the extent that growth will occur in Carrboro, I guess what I would like to see is a greater attention to new construction or redevelopment in established parts of the town along established transportation corridors rather than continuing to build suburban residential subdivisions. That's really important. I also want to say that George talked about expectations. Unfortunately, in North Carolina, a lot of our expectations have to be tempered by what the towns are allowed by the state government to do. And we all know that there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in Raleigh these days, and we as municipalities have to respond to those challenges.
And I think that came up in the first hour, actually, too, yes. That part of that discussion.
And finally, I just want to throw in this idea that as we, as a community, spend our resources on cultural events, arts events, those kinds of things, that we remember that we really ought to be providing those resources and planning those events for the people who live in the community. In other words, I don't want to see these necessarily as marketing tools so much as resources and events that are for the people that already live here. That's how we're going to honor and sustain our character and not treat our towns as sort of up for the highest bidder.
Brian Litchfield.
Well, we look forward to working with our partners, as I mentioned, the transit system earlier, the University, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro, to help them meet the visions that they've articulated. Chapel Hill through the 2020 process, Carrboro through their planning processes, and the University through the different development scenarios that they've created and are working to implement. So, again, we see ourselves as a partner in those efforts, and we're looking forward to working with all of them to help improve and provide access and connections to all these wonderful things that we're talking about, not only in our community, but at also looking at ways to where we can provide connections to the county and also throughout our region. Because again, many of the things that we do on the transit and transportation side are not just contained within our borders. Again, our focus very much so is within Chapel Hill and Carrboro first and foremost. But as we look out to the future, we'd like to be able to find ways to provide those connections and provide access beyond what we're doing today.
Thank you. Dwight Bassett, you notice I saved you for last because we've had this conversation
many times. I get the balance
of time,
right?
No.
So, you know, mine's actually kind of simple. You know, there was a point in time where Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and Orange County, to a large extent, was known as a place of innovation. We were the edge. We were leading the country in a lot of areas. And over time, we've kind of lost that edge. And the town of Chapel Hill, in conjunction with Orange County and UNC, has recently launched a new venture called Launch Chapel Hill. It's an innovation hub. And, you know, if I were to start telling you some of the business successes that have happened in the past that we forget about, Strata Solar started in Carrboro, moved to Chapel Hill, $500 million company, 465 employees now. That's our own. And we should not deny them the opportunity to be able to live and do business here. We've got a new opportunity to change that brand, to capture that innovation, the outgrowth of UNC and our residents. You look at the 20 people at Launch Chapel Hill right now, half of them are university related, half of them are town related or just locality related. We need to capture that. But we also need to provide the opportunity for them to grow. That means we need to not let North Chatham capture the what's left of our retail base. We need to grow our office absorption rate so that we can accommodate them as they do grow and not be so tight. And we need to look at a few key properties like Eubanks, Millhouse Road as opportunities for innovation centers for, you know, low impact manufacturing of widgets or whatever, or production of healthy juices or whatever. But there's no reason in areas like that we can't make better use of our land so that we're diversifying the opportunity when it comes to our commercial side of who we are as a community, and not saying, you know, it really doesn't belong here. There was a legend, and I'll close with this, before that since I've been here, that Chapel Hill had never really wanted wet lab space. Well, this was under Mayor McCoy, Mayor Foy's leadership, and we began to dig into that issue to find out if it was true, and we could not find out where that urban legend came from. So the vast majority of research demanded space for Chapel Hill went to the park or into Durham County because there was a presumption we didn't want it. Well, there probably is some that we don't want. We don't need to talk about that, but we can talk about the ones that we do want, and we can provide opportunity for them because we have virtually no wet lab space inside our corporate limits now. We need to change those paradigms to make sure that we're open for all sorts of businesses that our citizens want to engage in, and we'll balance our community better in a lot of ways.
Great. What George said earlier struck a chord about us being negative very often, but what realistic tools do you think we need to address these perceived barriers that we literally face on a day-to-day basis? And I know the county addresses this too, Renee Price. What tools might we want to address some of these things?
Well, I guess to go back to what I said before is working together, having joint meetings and trying to strategize together. We do have some difficulties with Raleigh, but I think with what's happening in Raleigh, but I think that if we really pull our resources together and our minds together, we can face some of these challenges. I mean, it's not as though we've never had challenges before and challenges that we've had to overcome. If we hadn't had challenges, all of us would not be sitting around this table. So, as far as some of the development, of course, we've been looking at this at the county level, as we have to look at some of these, our procedures, the bureaucracy, you know, in trying to get a development, do we need to have all those steps, and can we streamline it? I think all the governments have, you know, come up with the unified development ordinance or some kind of way of streamlining that whole process. I mean, well, just being able to understand what is entailed in getting a development permit. But I think if we can streamline, if we can make it easier, relax some of the laws, and as Dwight was saying, make it easy for people to come in and develop.
Dolores Bailey, what's your tool?
I think we need to do an education process. I'm going back to what George said. I think there are small businesses that don't know, not just developers, but people that want to start businesses, that want to keep their business running. We have the Midway Business Center. I think people need to understand what the process is for sustaining their small businesses in Chapel Hill.
Damon Siles, do you see a tool that stands out?
I'm not sure if this will count as a tool in your book, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think, and this comes back to the negativity comment, actually. So, we talk about this notion of change. And we say it in a very ominous way.
Yes,
it's
going to get us.
Right? And there are ways in which change can be bad. We've talked about some of those today. But change is inevitable, and our responsibility is to make sure that we do it in a way that sustains ourselves and our neighbors and our planet, and doesn't simply look for change for change's sake.
I think that's a great tool. George Cinciolo, do you have a tool?
Well, I think something along the lines of the process that 2020 started, that getting people involved, that the more people get involved, the more likely you are to come up with solutions that the entire community can live with. So I think that was a great start on the part of Chapel Hill. We tried to make it inclusive, and we said that everyone was involved, and we didn't exclude people from Carborough or the county or anything. But I think on a countywide basis, getting more and more people involved will help the process.
Well, thank you very much. All of you have just done an outstanding job talking about a very difficult subject so well. And that will wrap up Hour 4 of the 2013 WCHL Community Forum. This hour, as well as the entire day's broadcast, can be found on our website, chapelboro.com, at the end of today's events. This is Fred Black, and up next is Aaron Keck, who will return with another great panel on economic development. This is Fred Black. I appreciate your time.